camera's
can't
that
figure
hard.
Out how to video
even
with
what?
Good sound, oh. Or yeah, good sound, and still have the video because my GoPro doesn't have good sound. I was like, well, there's a very, very expensive
penis-shaped microphone
right.
That would work very well.
Yeah, there's a camera that literally does that. That's what it's for. Welcome into another episode of The Gym Closet. I am joined, as always, today by @jordan.hildreth. What's up, buddy?
What's happening?
It's another day in paradise, you know? What about you?
I would agree with that.
Have a good weekend?
I did. This weekend I competed in a triathlon. First time I've ever done something like
nice.
That. Nice! I will call it humbling. I have never swam competitively before. And I drank so much water trying to get through the swimming portion.
He's doggy paddling
dude,
the whole time?
At a certain point, I was just like, I'm just tired of swallowing all this water. I was dead last in my heat.
Okay, we'll go over a little bit more of that. We're going to give that in a segment right, as well. Right. But also joined by @ZachDowns1.
Nothing too much. Just another day in paradise. Long day at work.
Yeah, wait, hold on. You had an eventful. Was it Saturday where you said you ate?
Week.
A whole box of Oreos.
That was just Saturday.
Just Saturday.
That was just Saturday. That's a good Saturday.
Whole box of Oreos.
But it wasn't like one sitting. It was like the whole day. Every time I just passed, I'd grab two.
Yeah.
Nice. We'll dive into that a little bit more with Food for Thought, and talk about the last week of Zach's meals and after show type of binging and what to avoid and his lessons on getting back into it. So we'll have a little bit more of a segment on that. But do you have anything this weekend going on other than food?
No. Nope. I literally ate all weekend. I'm not even kidding.
Dedication to food.
Yeah, yeah. Like my whole house. Or my apartment, everything. Had to go get all fresh grocery Sunday. Start off, hit macros again, back low macros,
nice.
Back to cardio. Fun
nice.
Stuff.
All right, well, let's get into... We got an awesome guest today.
All right, so our guest today is my old wrestling coach, my old college wrestling coach, Nick Gansey. He is a firefighter in the city of Austin, Texas. What's up, Nick?
Hey, Jordan, how's it going?
Good. So we brought you on today to talk a little bit about coaching, a little bit about you work out a lot, and then a little bit about quite a bit about you as a firefighter and how that's kind of helped shape some of the other aspects of your life.
So, Nick, at Crave, we do different seasons. We have different emphasis inside the gym as well as outside of the gym. So, with this season starting in July, obviously 4th of July, we're celebrating hometown heroes, and that being firefighters, police officers, and the military. That's kind of our out-of-the-gym patriotism focus. Outside of the gym, inside of the gym, we are doing a striking season, which is an emphasis on our boxing and bag work. Basically, in our training system, we have four different elements. We have endurance, agility, striking, and strength, and that really permeates everything that we do. But in these different seasons, we have an in the gym emphasis and an out of the gym emphasis. So Jordan had talked about you being obviously a firefighter, you know, and that's our out of the gym emphasis here this season. But then he also said how involved you were as a coach and in the gym aspect of things too. So tell us first off kind of a little bit about your firefighting career and what got you into being a firefighter.
Okay, absolutely. Well, first of all, appreciate y'all supporting your local emergency services guys. Don't forget about those ambulance drivers, too. A lot of times they're separate from the firefighters
definitely.
And the police.
Yep.
So
first responders.
Just throwing a shout out to those guys. But, So I'm local. I'm from Austin, Texas. I went to high school here. Bounced around to a couple different colleges, and actually, my first exposure to firefighting was one of my old high school coaches. He was my cross country coach. So wrestling was my passion, but you know, I played a lot of other sports too. One of them was cross country, and so my old cross country coach had, for whatever reason, just decided to up and change his whole life and follow his dream, which was to be a firefighter. So here in Austin and a lot of places, the cutoff age for a civil service fire department is 35 years old. And so he was 34 years old, and he just thought, you know what, I'm gonna go do this. So I was in college. I was, you know, doing my own thing, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And somewhere along the lines, he had stopped coaching, and he was actually he was our high school basketball and cross-country coach. And then he had actually moved to a small college here in Austin and was coaching college basketball. And so he decided to follow his passion and apply for the fire department, you know, got in at age 34 and quit coaching, quit his whole career, and started a whole new section of his life. And so I think a year or two maybe into that, and we've kept in touch on and off, and kind of like Jordan and I do, you know, we were pretty good friends. And so he had kept in touch, and at some point he sends me an email and he says, "Hey man, I really think you should check this firefighting thing out." So so I went and, you know, visited him at his station, and I rode out with his crew, and basically I thought, this is amazing. This is your actual job, like, you get paid to do this, you know. And so that was kind of my first exposure.
Awesome.
And then, you know, at some other times I had met some other firefighters at different events. I was reffing some kids wrestling tournaments, and I met some firefighters that were off duty, but they were working as EMTs there and stuff. And so I got some more info from them, and this was kind of all happening around the same time. But you know, that coach was probably my biggest draw to it, just because we had that personal relationship, and he spoke so highly of it. I was, you know, kind of had some merit to me.
That's awesome. And so did he have obviously a big impact on you in your coaching career as well?
Yeah, so he was a funny guy. He was super intense. He played college sports too, and he was a funny guy. His name is Coach Holmes, and you know, he was a really good coach. He wasn't my wrestling coach, so I didn't have as much exposure to him. But just the way he coached was really interesting. That he just loved sports, and he loved student athletes, and he wanted to be a part of everything. In fact, I'll just give you a real brief funny story about Coach Holmes. Is at one point our high school didn't have a coach for women's softball. And so Holmes said, "Yeah, I'll coach it. I don't care, you know." And so this guy went from coaching, you know, varsity basketball and cross country with all guys in his on his team to coaching, you know, freshman and sophomore women's softball. And he brought his same passion and his same enthusiasm there, and there's no crying in softball moments on his team, but just watching
that's
him,
awesome.
He just was all about, you know, just pouring into those kids. Whatever the sport was, it didn't matter. Whatever he's going to do, he was going to do it 100%. So, you know, that's had a pretty good effect on me as in coaching. Was, you know, at UT, and Jordan can tell you, we had a pretty diverse group of athletes. You know, being a club team, there was no like making the team. If you want to wrestle, we're gonna be here for you, you know. And so we had some kids like Jordan that were state placers, you know, in high school, and some kids from different states that were pretty well accomplished wrestlers. And then we had some kids that they never knew anything about wrestling, but they just thought it would be cool and wanted to try it out. And so that was an area where I was just all about. I mean, you know, of course we all want to coach the stars, right? We all want to coach the studs, but I was just determined that I was going to pour into whoever wanted. If you're going to show up and practice every day, then I'm down. I'll be here, you know. So that was one of the ways that he kind of molded me there.
That's awesome. I think as a coach myself and coaches here at Crave, you know, having that coach, you don't know who you can actually inspire, whether it be an athlete that may just be, you know, want to be on the mat for social reasons and just be on a team, or, you know, or it's the stud. You know, it's awesome that kind of chain from your coach to coaching these kids, you know, had such an effect And I, you know, I hope as a coach myself and as our coaches here at Crave that, you know, we try to do that on a daily basis, you know.
Well, Nick was young too, so he was my age when I first met him. He was
okay,
26
awesome.
Years old. Nick, you're what? You're 32 now?
I'm 33 now, yeah.
Yeah, 33. So he was 26 years old when I met him as an 18-year-old sure. kid, which is, as a 26-year-old now, it's hard for me to believe.
Right. So what, yeah. what kind of, diving into the coaching aspect a little bit, what kind of coach was, I'll ask Jordan this question first, and then we'll have, see your response.
You
so what kind of coach was he, in your eyes as an athlete? And then we'll kind of talk about your coaching philosophies and stuff, Nick, when, after Jordan dives in.
So the freshman year was pretty interesting. He was an intense coach, man. He was, there's a famous video where he got really mad at me and threw some stuff, and my mom ended up seeing the video and didn't like Nick for a little while.
That's awesome.
That's just how he was just a really, really passionate guy, and I wasn't all the way in as a freshman because I had, like, this girlfriend and, like...
Yeah.
And I just... My head wasn't all the way there, but I specifically remember Nick reaching out way... And at the time, you know, it's things like, I appreciate it now, but at the
right.
time I was like... This guy won't leave me alone, man. Like, keeps messaging me. But, like, he went way above and beyond. And this is for a club. And that's what I couldn't
right.
understand at the time. Like, why would somebody reach this far out for a club? It doesn't make sense to me. And then as
that's
I
awesome,
got to
though,
know
yeah.
by the time I'm a senior and he's one of my best friends, you know, it had a dramatic effect. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, intense.
So, Nick, what's with that story, you know, having that intensity, that's awesome as a coach in my opinion. But what's some of your coaching philosophies and what do you live by as a coach?
So, I mean, I think like anything, all your philosophies in life, all your worldviews will change as you mature and as you grow. And like Jordan said, I was pretty young and I was pretty intense. And so to some extent, I would say some of my coaching philosophy has shaped as I've matured. But the thing that I think remains, and I think this is just something that's bred into you at a young age, is I don't care what I'm doing, I want to do it to the best of my abilities, you know, and people have different reasons for doing that, and maybe my reasons have changed. You know, when I was younger, I wanted to be the best because I wanted to be better than everyone else, no matter what I did. It didn't matter. Whatever we were doing, I wanted to be better than you. And, you know, as I've matured and I've grown up, now I've changed possibly my reasoning on that, and now I desire to be the best at whatever I do, to honor the Lord and to serve God and to, you know, just give my best in everything that I do. But in any case, my philosophy remains is that if you're going to do something, you know, you should do it to the best of your ability. And you know, like they say, you know, anything worth doing is worth doing right. So I think that's probably the biggest overarching theme to my coaching philosophy is, you know, I don't care what you're going to do, whether it's your diet, whether it's your lifting, your strength training, your conditioning, there's no reason to not do it to the best of your ability.
Definitely, and I definitely think that probably for you goes into your career as a firefighter as well. Kind of talk about how that coaching atmosphere, how that athletic atmosphere affects your job as a firefighter and what attributes that you've been able to take from that competitiveness in sports and as a coach to being a firefighter and making, you know, making that the focus of your career.
Sure. Yeah. So this, I mean, that was my biggest draw to firefighting when I first saw it was, basically like being on a sports team again, you know, and I was in college and I was on a club team like Jordan was, but we were fairly unorganized and I had a desire. I felt like I was missing that team sports aspect from high school. And when I saw these guys in the firehouse, man, they're like, whatever your favorite sport is, whatever team you were on, that's what it is. There's a bunch of guys and girls that are at the house and they're having a good time together. They work hard together, but they have fun. And just that environment is what drew me in the first place. And then once you get there, once you're drawn in, just having that sports mentality of whatever I do, I'm going to win. You know, I'm going to do the best I can possibly do. So taking that and just not saying like, oh, I'm a firefighter, cool, I've made it. You know, I want to get better every day. I want to learn something. I want to get stronger. I want to get faster. I want to get more knowledgeable about a subject. I want to get more experience, you know, just constantly trying to better yourself or improve your skills and abilities, I think is a real clear carryover from athletics.
I love that.
And then as far as coaching specifically, I still enjoy coaching. I'm not coaching any sports right now, but I do a lot of I do a fair amount of teaching. You know, I teach some things within our fire department, and then I also teach like first aid and CPR and some other things just in the community, just because I enjoy teaching and working with people, and you know, I enjoy sharing knowledge and trying to help other people, you know, achieve things.
I love it. I think you'd fit in great here at Crave for sure. With that, you know, walk us through kind of what does a day look like for you at the firehouse?
So Austin is a unique city in terms of our schedule. There's a lot of different fire department schedules. And you know, anywhere in the country you go, you'll find one of a few different schedules. But we run 24 hours on duty and 48 hours off duty. It's a continuous ABC, and it just goes on like that, you know, continually three shifts. But what's particularly unique about Austin is we shift change at noon. And, you know, if you guys, Jordan can tell you a little bit about Austin. It's a college town. It's a pretty liberal place. It's a pretty laid-back environment. We have a lot of tech companies. And that noon shift change has been around for longer than Austin has been the way it is, but it fits in well here. It's a very comfortable and laid-back schedule, you know. We get up, so a typical day would be, you know, I get up in the morning at whatever time and get things done around the house, you know, help my wife with something, do something with the baby, whatever. And then make it to work, you know. The thing about the fire department is it's like anything, right? So just because you go to the gym doesn't mean you're a gym guy, you know. It sounds like I know Jordan and from his description of y'all, it sounds like y'all are gym guys, you know. But
sure,
there's people that say they work out, and that means that, you know, they walked on the elliptical for 15 minutes and then
right, right,
or whatever.
Yeah.
But so there's places, you know, not every firefighter is the same, but for me and the places I work and the people I choose to work with and the stations I like to be at, you know, if shift starts at noon and you're not there by 11, you're doing something wrong, you know?
Sure.
So we get there early, and we start, if you have a chance to let the guy before you go home early say, hey, man, you know, I know you got something to do, let me grab it, and you can go relieve early or whatever. And then we just start checking the truck, go over all of our equipment, make sure everything's in order, you know, run all the tools, and just make sure everything's in order. Right? We always, in the fire department, we say, trust but verify. It's not that I don't trust the guy before me, but if I'm going to wear this air pack, I'm going to check it, you know, before I go on duty. So we'll spend, you know, a good amount of time checking our gear, and then we'll usually all meet for lunch. You know, everybody will eat lunch together, kind of talk about what are we going to do today. The officer of the station will give you a little rundown, like, hey, this is what we're going to do. We got this training. We're going to take this class. And then, you know, and then we'll just, you know, jump on whatever the schedule of the day is. Typically, there's some sort of training involved, whether it's taking a class, you know, we have to do a certain amount of online classes, or whether it's we're going to go out and we're going to practice pulling this hose or whatever it is. And then sprinkled throughout the day, of course, is you're going to run calls, you know, whenever. And that's the thing about the fire service that's different than most other jobs, with the exception of, you know, military, police, EMS, stuff that you were talking about earlier, is, you know, I'm at the station and I don't know when that tone's going to go off. So you're kind of just, you're doing other things, you're being productive, but you're always ready to go do, you know, your true job. Our job is to run calls, to be ready to run calls. And so we'll be doing whatever training we're doing, and then, of course, run calls as they come. Dinner time, you know, we usually cook together, and then we eat together, do dishes together. And then after dinner, for us, it's pretty chill. It's, you know, watch some TV, play a little Xbox, whatever. And that's kind of the shift. Now, since we shift change at noon, when we get up in the morning, you still have a few hours before you get off duty. And that's when we'll clean the whole station, clean the rigs, you know, get everything squared away and looking good. And the idea there being, you know, I want those guys, when they come in, to know that we, you know, we got it all ready for them and we took care of everything. Of course, they're going to check their own gear, but, you know, the station should look perfect when they get there, everything should be clean and ready to go when those guys get there.
Awesome. How does the hierarchy of the firefighters work? Is there for those who don't know, you know, is there a like a pecking order? Do you get promoted to a certain level? What does that look like for you guys?
So for Austin specifically, every department will have a similar thing. You know, just for those of you that are in the military, you know, each branch will have their own rank structure, but it's very, very similar. Okay, so for Austin specifically, we have our cadets, meaning you're in the training academy. That's as low as you get. You're in the academy. You're not a firefighter. You work for the Austin Fire Department, but you're still in training. So those are our cadets.
Sure.
When you finish your training academy, you'll be assigned to a station, and you're what we call the probie, or probationary firefighter, meaning you're certified as a firefighter. You work just like every other firefighter, but you're just about as low as it gets. You will, if there's a bad job, you'll get the worst of them, and there's certain expectations that you'll always answer the phone. You always answer the door. You will be the first one out the door when the tones go off. You'll carry everything. You're the one that cleans the toilets, right? That's your position here. And it's not for the purpose of, like, hazing. It's to show respect to the guys that have been doing it for a long time. And you know, most guys are eager to take that role. It's one of the things. You'll learn a lot about somebody when they're on probation. Are they the kind of guy that's going to do just enough when you're looking? Or are they the kind of guy that says, if I'm going to clean this toilet, when they come in here, they're going to say, man, I've never seen a toilet this clean before, you know? So
Right.
So that's probation for those guys. And then once you finish your probationary period, you'll be a firefighter, or what they call a tailboard. And that's a throwback to the days when the firefighters would actually stand on the rear bumper on the tailboard of fire trucks on the way to
calls.
So then those are firefighters. And then to go up from firefighter, well, I guess actually you'll be the rookie firefighter. And so you're the rookie firefighter until another newer guy comes, until a new rookie gets there. So some guys, a new rookie, you know, a new probie graduates the academy in 6 months or a year, and then he comes and he'll be the rookie. But some guys may be the rookie for 2, 3, 4 years until another rookie comes, and that's, you know, you're the lowest guy until somebody lower gets there.
Sure.
And so then from there it's promotions, and there's testing processes and, you know, promotional processes, and the next step up would be the driver. We call them driver operators up north. They tend to call them engineers. It's just a difference in, you know, their lingo than ours. But that's the next up position. From there, we have lieutenants, captains, and then there's battalion chiefs, division chiefs, assistant chiefs, and so on and so on. So from there, we just call all the chiefs or all the white shirts. Here we wear firefighters wear blue, and all the chiefs wear white. So we just call them all white shirts after that.
Sure. So what when you get into kind of the white shirt rank, what is the responsibilities? Are you on the road as well, or do you have more of the kind of desk job at that point?
So obviously a firefighter is a firefighter, and a driver drives the unit. Those are pretty self-explanatory. A lieutenant is in charge of a pumping apparatus, so an engine company, and then a captain for us will be in charge of a ladder company, and then our first level of chiefs is battalion chiefs, and some of them are on the road. Some of them run calls with us, and they'll take command of bigger incidents, and they take care of staffing and personnel issues at the stations and things like that. But for the most part, they're managerial. I mean, that's a pretty big jump from when you put a white shirt on. You're mainly managerial at that point. They're not going to be pulling a hose. They shouldn't be, you know, if your chief is pulling a hose, something's going wrong, you know, so...
Sure.
And then after that, it's pretty much just office jobs after that. They're mainly managerial.
Okay. In kind of circling back around to, obviously, we're a gym fitness podcast here, but so in your day-to-day, do you guys have a decent gym then at the station?
Yeah. I know Jordan went to one of our station that I used to work at, which had a real small gym, but he may have gone to the station that I spent most of my career at, which is we have a huge gym, man. It's like, it's the width of, it's bigger than the width garage and about three times as deep because it's for the fire trucks, not, you know, your cars.
Sure, sure.
So it's a pretty good gym. We have some of it the city provided, some of it we, you know, buy and ship in and buy over the years. We had a large gym in the area that kind of replaced a lot of their stuff, and they we were able to make a connection with them and get a lot of stuff donated. So, I mean, we have a nice lifting platform and a you know, a couple sets of bumpers and a couple of nice bars, and then we have, you know, three racks, just regular squat rack power cages, and like at our station, our dumbbells go, I think, from 5 to 120 or something. So we have a pretty good range of weights there. You know, we got a heavy bag. We've got some couple of guys, and what you'll find is whatever the guys at that station are into is what you'll see. You know, so we have a couple guys cool. that are into strongman stuff. So we have some boulders, we have some stones, we have, you know, ropes and different stuff, and then we have a couple of guys that are CrossFitters. So we have a lot of bumper plates, and we have a pretty good range there.
Nice. So what kind of training do you do personally?
You know, I mix it up. I'll go through phases where I'll kind of self-diagnose. I'm sorry, is the baby coming through over there? Are y'all hearing the baby scream?
Not too much. Yeah.
Okay, my wife and I are on our way home from Bible study, and the baby is not happy right now.
Oh shoot! Yeah, we've had my son in here screaming and whining, so that wouldn't turn us off too much.
I'll try to kind of self-diagnose where I feel my weaknesses at this time, and I'll try to address that. Unless I have something particular coming up, you know, one thing Jordan knows about me is I like to challenge myself, and even if nobody, I mean, I'm not a particularly big guy, but I've done some bodybuilding competitions, I've done some powerlifting competitions, I've done some. You know, on a whim, I entered a wrestling tournament with Jordan and got my butt kicked as a
nice
against a bunch of high level college kids. And I just like to challenge myself. So if I'm training for something particular, I'll focus on that. But otherwise, I'll just kind of self diagnose where I think I'm lacking, and then I'll go through a phase where I'll work on that. You know, where I may do, you know, more traditional bodybuilding splits, or then I'll transition to you know, some barbell complexes or some more functional movements, you know, just whatever I feel sure. like I'm lacking at that time, I guess.
Just always progressing and new goals just come and go as you continue to progress, so that's awesome.
Absolutely, just trying to always get better at something, you know, and so when I get to the point where I think I'm doing pretty good, then I go, okay, well, then let me find something else and try to get good at that, so.
That's awesome. So we're getting to about that point where we're going to wrap up, but, if you could leave our, listeners, you know, one piece of advice, one quote, one thing from Nick, you know, what's your end message? If you could get anything to, our audience.
Well, I'll give you two, because I'm going to give you the one that I want to give, and then I'm going to give you the one that's related to your podcast that you guys
awesome.
Want to hear.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I would say if I could give anybody one piece of advice, it's find the Lord and have a good relationship with Jesus. Get to know him on a personal level, and it'll change your life, man. It'll change your perspective on everything. That's the biggest thing in my whole life is the Lord Jesus, and so that would be my honest answer if I could only tell you one thing, is pick up the book and get to know the Lord.
But I love
related
it.
To your podcast, I would say that, you know, my advice would be to find something that you enjoy and constantly try to get better. Don't settle. Just, you know, constantly be striving to do your personal best at whatever it is that you're doing at that time. So for me, that's firefighting. I love it. For you, that's training, that's coaching, and I'm sure from here in Jordan, you guys are the kind of guys that are always learning, always gathering more tools and more toys, and you know, so that would be my advice. Just always try to get better and don't settle.
That's awesome. Hey, man, we really appreciate you being on. You know, I know Jordan talks highly of you and that you've been an inspiration in his life. So, you know, we love to talk to people that have been, you know, affected. And we try to, you know, we try to surround ourselves with, you know, the best type of people. And you're one of them. So we appreciate you. Anything, Jordan, that closing off here?
Nope, Nick, I really appreciate you coming on, man. It's good to hear that stuff. You're big, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. And likewise, Tyler, you know, I respect Jordan's opinion a lot, and he speaks highly of you guys, and he really enjoys your gym. So anybody who's listening who hasn't been there, you ought to go check it out. Jordan doesn't just say that about any gym, so pleasure meeting you, Tyler.
Yeah, definitely. It was good talking to you. Again, we appreciate you coming on, and thank you for your service and everything that you do down in Austin, and thank you for everything that you had to say today.
All right.
All thanks, right. Tyler. Drive safe.
You, see ya.
All right. Bye, guys.
All right, now we're back. Thank you so much for to Nick. That was an awesome interview.
Nick Gansey.
Awesome interview that, you know, he has a really inspirational message. You know, if you skipped to the segments, don't go back and listen back to that interview. You know, is awesome. Great message. He went over a lot of what, you know, the day-to-day down. Granted, he's down in Austin, but, you know, he went through a lot of what a firefighter's job looks like and what entails, you know, or what is kind of the day-to-day service that they do for us. And you know, we really, with the season that we're in, we're really wanting to celebrate those guys. So thanks again, Nick. And let's get into some segments.
Let's do it.
All right. So first one, coming off of that interview, you know, he had a awesome advice at the end, but I want to jump into a quote. So I have a quote of the day, and actually got got it from another podcast that I actually just pulled it. I don't, you know, it was a sweet little snippet here, but the quote of the week that I wanted to go over this week is, "Ignorance is acceptable because it's solved by knowledge and research. Stupidity is guarding your ignorance." I thought that was really cool. So stupidity is and that was from Ted Nugent. So you know Ted Nugent.
Was he on
so.
Joe Rogan's?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Okay. Yep. So I think he's been on there several times, but
recently I saw.
Yeah. Yep. So he was, and he. I mean, that's an awesome point. Is basically saying that, and it's kind of what we preach here: always progressing, always learning.
It's okay to be ignorant of things.
Exactly. You don't know everything. Yeah, just fix it, and you know, do that. You can solve ignorance by knowledge and research, which I thought was awesome. And then I also like the snippet with saying, but if you are guarding that if you're guarding that ignorance, that's stupidity. You're basically holding on and for no reasoning, trying to hold on to an argument that just doesn't make sense or something. So yeah, I really like that. So that's my quote of the week. Let's go into Jordan. You got a Today I Learned.
I have two. They're quick ones, but I thought they were both really interesting.
Awesome.
In 1997, a poacher wounded a tiger and stole part of its kill. Tiger found the poacher's cabin, destroyed his belongings, and waited at least half a day for him to return, and then killed him and ate him. That's fucking crazy. Tigers are crazy.
So that was just a vengeful ass tiger.
Yeah, dude. I read that and thought that was amazing.
So okay. say that one more time.
All right.
I don't want to hear it again.
A poacher wounded a tiger and stole part of its kill. The tiger found the poacher's cabin, destroyed his belongings, waited at least half a day for him to return,
and just
killed and ate
chilled.
Him.
Just that's
waited.
Awesome.
Like, all right, this motherfucker's going
to
be back.
I smell him. He's going to be here. I'm just going to be patient and wait to fuck up his day.
And then, so that's along awesome. The vengeful lines is that after Kanye's interruption of Taylor Swift's acceptance speech, Comedy Central played a South Park episode mocking Kanye's ego 4 times in a row, back to back to back to back.
Really?
Have you seen that episode, Fish Sticks?
I don't know if I have seen that episode.
It's really funny. He turns into like a mermaid. It's ridiculous, but they played it 4 times in a row.
That's
2 hour
awesome.
Block of Kanye West being an idiot.
That is awesome. Just to get back at him and for stupidity.
Yep, yeah, there you
that's
go.
Awesome. That's sweet. No, I love those today. I learned those are little snippets of that Jordan gets out that I absolutely love. Let's do an athlete highlight. We have a couple of athletes here at Crave Gym. We had Glenn and Bobby both did a mud run in Omaha and killed it. They've been doing a couple of them, I think. And it's awesome to see those athletes.
Let me tag on to that shout out for a little bit. So I did a workout at 6:30, which is the time that Glenn normally does last week. And I've never worked out with the guy before. That dude is fucking intense.
He kills it, doesn't he?
There were times, like, and it's the, what's the box jump where I'm jumping over to one side and then jumping over?
The up and overs.
And I was doing them. We had, you know, I think we were doing sets of 20. And I had to do those, and I'm thinking the whole time, I can't stop. Then I saw him out of the corner of my eye, and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, now I really can't. And, like, I could just see him, and I was like, I won't stop if Glenn doesn't stop. And he wouldn't!
Like, you're gonna yell at him.
Fucking stop it!
Right.
That was intense.
I love it. That's awesome.
It's been a long time since I've done a class and been like uber impressed with one of the athletes. And I'll tell you what, Glenn throws down.
That's awesome.
That was fun.
Huge shout out to Glenn. Great job. And I mean, he's killing it on the weekends doing those mud runs and obstacle course runs and all that kind of stuff too. So huge shout out to him, and Bobby joined him as well. And then the next highlight that we were going to get into is actually Jordan here did a try.
It's a highlight.
it's a shout out at least. Doing a try. So kind of go over your story for the try.
It's for the corporate games, and it was just like, yeah, I'll do a triathlon. I've never done one before. I enjoy challenging myself by trying new things. I knew the swim was going to be bad, but I didn't know it was going to be as bad as
that
it was.
Bad.
So I just expected to be tired. I didn't expect to swallow half of the lake and then just, like, hate my life. So I got through the swim part finally and was just, like, logged down with water. Hopped on the bike and started going. And I don't even own a bike. I had to borrow a helmet and I had to borrow a bike from a friend. And awesome. As I'm riding the bike, some asshole hit me from behind.
Really?
He hit my bike and took me out. And broke the bike that I borrowed from my friend. Bent the wheel.
Double
and I had
whammy.
To walk like a mile back with the bike on my shoulder into a spot where I could wait for the car to come pick me up.
That sucks.
Yes, it does. But I finished the 5K. I got back in and I was like, I put the bike up and I was like, I'm running this 5K.
Nice.
Like,
you know what would have been just baller of you to do like a front handstand wheelie
and just go the whole way? Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Why didn't I think of that?
Right.
Gosh darn it, Tyler, where were you?
I don't know. Or manhandle and fix the bike.
It was an interesting introduction to a triathlon. I think if I did it again, I would train a little bit for swimming and then not crash the bike.
Let's get into a little bit of an alpha beta.
Yeah.
And are you an alpha beta situation if you get wrecked on your bike and then can't fix it?
With the no tools that I have on the bike that I borrowed.
Right.
Yeah. No, I don't think that has anything to do with.
I think an alpha male comes prepared.
I'm gonna double down and say I am alpha because I ran that 5K after that accident.
I think that's an alpha move.
Would have done that.
That's an alpha move. But I also will argue alpha males come prepared.
Right.
And would have had tools
to
fix.
Should I have had an extra? The piece is called a derailleur, which I didn't know existed until it broke.
One or two.
Should I have had an extra one of those 5-pound clunky things in the back of my...
At least one or two, probably.
At least two, just in case.
Right.
Right.
In case the second one, or in case the first one breaks, then you're prepared for the second one.
That makes sense.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay.
Awesome. So those are our athlete highlights and our alpha beta. Let's go into... We got a food for thought with... Zach here. So Zach got done with his show about a week ago.
Literally.
So our food for thought is is a little. It's gonna piss me off a little bit because I'm on my poverty macros that we talked about a little bit last week.
But I'm gonna enjoy this discussion. So
but
go ahead.
Zach's gonna kind of go over what was your mind frame coming out of the show? What did you eat like crazy? I know we talked about it a little bit, but we only talked about one day. So from that day, Sunday to Sunday, what did that week look like? Because I know you went off the deep end a little bit, and tell us a little bit about the
it's
food.
It's been 2 weeks, hasn't it?
No, it's been a week.
Right at a week.
Yeah, oh. Right at a week.
Yeah, because last podcast we were reporting
like
2 days.
Couple days.
Out.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So this couple days had a couple days.
I guess a week and 2 days.
Yeah. Had a couple days that were not the best post show, like that Saturday night, Tuesday, and then got some
together on Wednesday.
So basically, okay, I'll start over. Had a couple days that were bad. Had some days that were okay. Had some more days that were bad. And then finished up the week with some more bad days. So basically had about 2 days where I was eating okay, about Wednesday, Thursday, and then just went off again for a couple days. And then I was like, okay, I gotta figure this out. This is not good.
So how much of a surplus do you think you were in on those days? Like, how many calories do you think you were, if you had to just, I know you didn't track.
Ballpark it.
Oh, every day was different. There'd be a day where I was, you know, it wasn't bad. I had maybe 280, 300 carbs. It was all right. And then there'd be days I was at like 1500.
Really?
I know I didn't discuss this with you fully.
Right. This is the development. This is the first time his coach has heard this. So.
Oh boy. Tyler's face is super red right now.
And then the next day I'd be like, oh my gosh, that was horrible. I'd come maybe run a little bit, wash my food, and then the next day I was like, man, I'm not prepping for shows. I'm going to eat some more. So I had to go enjoy a different food. And Sunday came, and I texted Tyler, and I was like, okay.
I fucked up.
We need to figure this out. And I seriously texted him and was like, I need to know what to do. Like, we got to get a plan in place. And he's like, all right.
We did have a loose plan in place. We said, yeah, go back to, 3 or 4 weeks out from your show and
hit. No, that was right? Now. Yeah, so that...
Right, but that's
so,
what we said after the show, too.
After
have
show...
Have your Sunday, and
no,
then go
after
3 weeks out.
We went right to 250.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And
but we had a plan going.
Yes,
on,
we had a plan. So
we just
were
chose
like,
not to follow that plan.
We had a little higher carbs. I could have tracked and been fine. So I was at those higher carbs, about 250 or so, and I didn't hit those. I went way over those, and...
What do you eat that gets you into a... A 1500
candy.
Carb.
Yeah,
day.
So
candy?
Definitely one thing of like Blue Bunny ice cream. That's 150 right there. Okay, 150 carbs and one little personal Blue Bunny ice cream.
So much fat.
And a ton
are
of
those
fat.
Yeah, yeah,
a lot
of fat.
Similar.
Yeah. Similar.
Yeah. They're just ice
box
cream.
Box of Velveeta.
Like strictly made for taste.
Box of Velveeta. Fantastic. Velveeta mac and cheese. That's super easy to eat.
Yeah.
And that's one of the foods that I could not fit at all
during
prep.
Yeah.
And so I just ate the whole box.
Yeah.
And that was 150 carbs there. I mean, a box of cereal, you're at 200.
A box. Not a bowl of cereal, yeah. A box
okay,
of cereal.
Okay, okay. Again, I was prepping for 30 weeks,
hey,
7
look,
months.
I'm not going to believe it. I went way off the end. You're like,
right.
You're trying
and
to.
And I tell people this all the time, and I've been in.
It's
I've been
so,
where you
it's
are,
so
too.
Hard.
The hardest part of prep is after your show and trying
and
to get into
I did not realize
diet.
That until
but,
this last week.
And that's why I should have told you to listen to the podcast that we had on why you're fat.
Oh, no, I was in it, and that's why.
I know you were
that's
here.
That's why I felt.
I think you blacked out during it.
That's why I. So the biggest thing I noticed is I'd eat like crazy, but then I would feel so guilty, and I would get
right.
So mad at myself.
And that's, you know, that's
and
a lot of times.
I'd go back and forth,
up.
And it was so hard.
You didn't give a
any
shit.
Of my debauchery. Because you got, but you got to know, like, you've been an athlete your whole, and this doesn't apply to everybody, but you know
right.
You're gonna get back in here and work out. And I'm not saying go off the
yeah.
Diet.
See,
I'm
and this,
not trying
this
to like
the, this is the other thing,
Tyler's
right?
Saying.
But this is the other thing that I mean that's the mental side of things
yeah.
That causes a lot of people that don't know if they're gonna be long term in the sport or don't know if they're gonna be training long term. That causes them to have a bad relationship
yeah.
With food if you do a show, and that's we've talked about it, I think before
oh,
where
yeah.
We said. If you're not sure about doing a show or doing an extreme diet
yep.
In general, don't do it.
Don't do it.
If you don't know it's for you, don't do it.
I just told somebody that they shouldn't do it. They were like, I want your advice on doing it. And like,
yeah.
I know a little bit. And I was like,
right.
It's not what you want to hear. I know what you're looking for by asking me, but I'm telling you right now, you should
right.
Not do it.
And that's what I hear a lot of people, and especially when back in the day, just in general gyms,
yeah.
And you would see people be like, oh, you should do a show. 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 And there is, I mean, there's a point, but I would rephrase it to, you have a great physique. that would be competitive
in
a bodybuilding. You are capable of doing it if that was something you would ever think about. But saying you should do a show gets it in their mind like, and, oh, yeah, I should do it. And it seems like it holds you responsible. And that's not what you want on your shoulders when you're what's going on?
Did you
Or
something? Oh, is it going?
I was just going to say another reason that I felt super guilty in that feeling wasn't because like, okay, well, I'll just say the reason it was because of that fat podcast in education background on it and knowing I actually am working on it now, but creating new fat cells that weren't there and didn't exist and are going to fill up and now exist versus like, so that was the reason I felt so guilty. Cause I was like,
right. Cause
I'd enjoy the food and I'd be like,
crazy Pandora's box of knowledge.
Like, I'm not on prep, you know, I'm going to enjoy this food I prep for so long. But then right after I'd be like,
right.
Oh my gosh. But then I'd go back to, I was prepping for so long and then I'd go back to
right.
Just
and keep in mind everybody, you know, when you do a show, it's such an extreme that's why I really enjoy doing the studies and stuff on athletes that are doing shows, because it shows you one super extreme to one super extreme and how to avoid some of that.
Yep.
If you're not doing a show, avoid the poverty macros.
Yep.
Avoid, you know, making your metabolism go down and avoid some of those hormone issues, because you can diet in a good way if it's not, you know, bodybuilding is an extreme, whether it's, you know, male, female, any of the categories.
That's a really good point, because most people that are listening are probably not bodybuilders.
Right.
This is the extreme of the extremes. These aren't things that normal, like a normal macro diet will make you feel. You won't feel guilty for eating 1,500 carbs.
Right.
Because you can't. You won't.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You don't.
Exactly.
In a normal nutrition, you don't get, the sensation of, I've been dieting for 30 weeks, now I'm going to be not diet and go crazy, right?
I can't even imagine.
That's what we want to avoid with flexible nutrition that we do with our general population athletes. We're going to be lifestyle nutrition. We're going to be balanced. We're going to be doing those things.
Great
I mean, these are the extremes, as you can see. So great segment on food for thought. I like that conversation. Think lastly, we have couch potato. I have a couch potato.
I kind of thought of one food for thought as we were doing that.
Oh, did you? Okay, go ahead. Nope, we'll go food. We'll finish up.
My food for thought was basically, you know, Nick was my old wrestling coach, so he's obviously had a huge impact on my life. Like, college years are such confusing times, and to have somebody as smart and as intelligent and as driven as Nick in my life, as much as he was in my life, I saw that dude all the time.
Yeah.
We would text each other. He would ask how practice, if he wasn't there, he'd ask how practice went. So, I mean, it's easy to see a lot of what I think that I bring to this podcast, how you need to push yourself, how you need to challenge yourself, how you need to do some of those things. And even reliving it, me hearing his answers to some of those questions, it's super easy to see
where I learned a lot of that from him.
It's remarkable. I know that, and I was still surprised as he was answering some of these questions.
That's awesome.
Holy shit. Like, so my point is, listen to some people in your lives when you're young, and they will have good, and not just when you're young, I shouldn't say that. Like, people
just
have
that mentor all the time.
Impact on you that sometimes you don't realize until it's in your face, but it's good. So be open to that stuff.
That's awesome.
I mean, that was really cool listening to him talk about that stuff. It reminded me of a lot.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, a lot of that is, you know, what we've talked about, you know, finding your mentors and kind of grasping on and the people that you hang out with are, what's the saying is, you're the sum of like the top five people you hang out with, most five people you hang out with or something like that. That quote is super accurate.
Yep.
So, I mean, make sure that you are hanging with the right people. And we've talked about even, you know, getting rid of the wrong people before. So go back and listen to that podcast too. But we're going to get into couch potato, which is sitting on the couch and binging that we all do. So I started.
That's what I did all weekend.
I can imagine you did with that Ben and Jerry's ice cream next to you, too. And
the couch potato show.
Right. Yeah.
It was awesome.
I sat down. I started doing Netflix cardio. So I have my phone out now, and I was like, I got to find something to watch on cardio. Yeah, so I've been humming away on the bike. I'm at about 25 minutes nearly every single day. And so I found, I was like, I'm going to see how far I can get through a documentary on cardio just to prove to myself, again, how shitty this cardio is. Because I can, I went through 19 hours of a documentary while doing cardio. But I started The Staircase. Have you heard of that yet? So The Staircase is a, have you heard of Making a Murderer?
Yeah.
I think it's made by the same
that
guy.
That was great.
But the crazy thing of
that show was Donkey Balls.
You didn't like it?
I hated it.
Really?
Yep.
I thought it was just crazy how back and how you could literally believe
both.
Yeah, I
agree with you. Yeah.
And this one's very interesting. So this guy, he was acquitted, but I believe, and that's just on the news since then. It started in 2005, but he started doing this documentary knowing that his case, that the cards were going to be kind of stacked against him.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me. So he thought, because the cards are going to be stacked against me and I might get in trouble for this. The crime staircase was his wife, everything alleged, obviously. I don't know the exact court case and how it came out, but I'm still watching it, obviously. But the wife, he calls 911, wife falls down the steps, dies, hit her head, bleeding all over, blah, blah, blah. So they basically accuse him of murder and go through this trial. But he had, I think the movie makers were looking for another story while this case was kind of going on. And so he, along with the movie makers and his lawyer, started this process of a documentary while the case was going on, knowing that, okay, we're going to kind of keep everybody accountable by filming everything.
Yeah.
And then they put it in the documentary. So I thought that was really cool. And I've only watched the first episode. So, I mean, it's really interesting
How
so
many
far.
Episodes is but it?
I, it's quite a bit. I think 10? It's like
Are
10.
They an hour long?
Yeah.
That was my beef 46. With Making a Murderer.
46 minutes.
Each episode was an hour, and it was the same case. And there were 10 episodes. And then they were going to make a season.
They did
two.
Stretch that.
Yeah, they did.
Above
yeah,
and
they
beyond.
Did.
Yeah.
I think I watched like three, and I was like, how much
well,
more
you,
could
you,
possibly
if you
be
keep
involved?
Yeah.
You're just talking about the same things
if
over and over
walking,
again.
If you keep watching, yeah, you see like the same episode in each episode.
Yeah.
And then like
that was my
10 minutes
that
of
show.
New information comes out. Yeah, no,
because
I agree.
Because the first, don't get me wrong, when I first, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then
a little bit into it, I
was like,
and it repeated itself, and it repeated itself.
So that was
and
my
and
beef
repeated
that. And then
itself.
You find out that the directors and editors had left out just shitloads of information
right
against whatever point they were trying to make, and you're like, oh, God
right.
damn it.
Yeah, yeah, that's the crazy part, too. Yeah. But they did a good job of keeping it kind of suspenseful, I guess, with that one, too.
Yeah.
This is because they leaked information late, like, throughout the documentary.
Yeah.
They knew that they weren't going to give you that information right away.
Yeah.
But then let's go into Zach's. Zach's got a... Actually, let's go first. How many Rick and Morty's have you watched?
Yes. I'm almost on with season 3.
Nice.
Yep.
All of them? Really?
Guess what I did this weekend.
Hey, binge-watch Rick and Morty.
Yeah, Friday, I didn't do anything. People were like, hey, what's up? What's going on Friday? And I was like, I'm busy.
I got cartoons to watch, Morty, baby.
I got plans with Rick and with Morty.
Awesome.
All right,
going into Zach's couch potato.
I started, I don't know, I don't think you've ever mentioned it, but I started Narcos.
I never got into that, yeah.
And, yeah, so basically it's
Season 3 now?
All the stories. I started on Season 1. I'd never
but
watched.
But I think there was Season 3.
Oh,
seasons.
I have no idea. Yeah, still in Season 1, but basically the entire story of how Pablo Escobar came about from, you know, the very bottom.
And I actually have seen the first couple episodes of that Season 1, I think.
And it is crazy.
Yeah. That's the
really
Medellin,
wanted to
right?
watch. I really wanted to watch that show, but the first... Somebody apparently had watched it on our Netflix, so when I clicked play episode, I accidentally watched the 10th episode of the first
that.
Season.
Oh,
but I watched
man.
The whole thing, and I was like, how much does this show expect me to understand?
Right.
Like,
wait a minute.
Just
what
like
background?
I was like, this is so confusing. And
what
then it got to the
what
end.
What book did I have to read
and
before?
No new episode played, and I was like... damn it.
Watch the last episode of it.
Honestly, the show just blows your mind.
Yeah.
Like, $30 billion.
How much cash?
$30 billion. Like, there was
a new movie
throughout.
There was a new movie about it with the three guys, and it was about the pilot. What was that one called? About how the CIA was involved in the gun smuggle thing. It's with Tom Cruise is the pilot. Mm. That's a good one. I forget. I just watched that, too, on Netflix.
Yeah.
God, I'll have to think about what that is now. Google that real quick.
Tom Cruise, pilot, Pablo Escobar.
Pablo Escobar and, I guess, the three other brothers that were involved, too.
Well, but it's like those drug lords. What's the new one? His name's Chapo. Chapo Guzman.
El Chapo.
El Chapo.
That, he's in a rap song.
His net worth is, like, estimated at American-made. Like
American-made, yes. American Made was the movie.
Yeah, but it's crazy. All the stuff he did, like bombings, just killing. Like, the show goes into a lot of detail. And, like, you know who Pablo Escobar is, but you don't know all
you
the
don't
stuff.
Know
you don't
until
know.
Until you narco.
No, but really, it's.
That's a great way to end the show. You don't know until you narco.
It's crazy. It's pretty disturbing, honestly, but the show's awesome. Good.
So there's your couch potatoes for the next weekend. Thank you guys for joining us. Again, another huge thanks to Nick for jumping on and talking to us. And if you haven't already, please follow the Gym Closet Podcast on Instagram and on Facebook. And you can find us at Crave Gym Everything and at TR Crave Strong, Crave with a K, at Jordan.Hildreth and at Zach Downs, and we are out of here. Love you guys.
Peace.